For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to Orioles on the Verge. This is Zach Spedden, joined as always by Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens. And on tonight's episode, we're going to talk about the players who just missed our top 50 prospects countdown list. If you have not had a chance to listen to that yet, be sure to do so. That was released last week. And we gave pretty thorough reports on the players who made our list. So you're going to want to check that out. But tonight's episode is going to focus on the players who just missed our list. And in this case, the main criteria is they made at least one individual list. So in other words, Bob, Nick, or I voted for that player, but that player missed our overall top 50. So we're each going to focus on the players that we voted for that missed the top 50. And then at the end of the episode, we're going to discuss maybe those one or two players that we thought long and hard about including on our top 50s, but that ultimately fell just short. And I'm going to dive right into it here with the player that Bob had ranked 46 on his list, an infielder from the 2023 draft class that had a nice showing at Delmarva last summer. And you should have your eye on going into the season, regardless of whether or not he made our top 50.
Yeah, that would be middle infielder Jaylen Vasquez. Played a little bit of shortstop, little second base. Actually felt like he got, no, he didn't play third base. I thought he might have snuck in a game at third base, but 20th round pick out of North Greenville University, $30,000 signing bonus. Did not think anything of him when the draft happened, but then he was one of maybe the only infielder that they drafted, or at least one of very few. And he came out and really performed in FCS. Well, he got in two games, batted 200. That's insignificant, but went up to Delmarva, got in 24 games, 93 plate appearances, and hit 267 with an 822 OPS, a 139 WRC plus, 18.3% walk rate, only a 20.4% strikeout rate, 147 ISO. He stole five bases in eight attempts, five doubles, three triples, you know, just really, really solid numbers for a guy who I had no thoughts on whatsoever. And now I'm like, he can play defense and he's at least perform with the bat, got good strikeout and walk numbers. With this hitting development, this player development that we have here in Baltimore, just feel like he should not be flying too far under our radar. And let's see what he can do now that he's going to be in Aberdeen, most likely to start the year, and see where he goes from here. But at bare minimum, really solid depth piece for the organization.
Yeah, I don't know what it is about these 20th round draft picks that the Orioles have taken since they shortened the draft to 20 rounds. But like, I mean, Trenton Craig still remains intriguing if he can put together a full healthy season. Reese Sharp was someone who I fell in love with, a lot of the pitch data that I found on him right after the draft, after we were like berated for not doing a day three draft recap episode. Inside joke there, bad radio, sorry about that. But I did that the next year, the day three draft recap, and Reese Sharp was a guy that the data was awesome on. Unfortunately, it was just announced that he had Tommy John surgery, so he's out until 2025. But Jaylen Vasquez is like continuing that trend here. Lefty shortstop, numbers in Delmarva were good. He did pretty much what every other, all the top draft prospects did last year. Even guys like Bradfield and Matt Corvath and those guys, they hit well in Delmarva, walked a lot, stole a couple of bases. He didn't have, you know, the 20 stolen bases like Bradfield did and everything, but he's still 17 walks and 19 strikeouts in 24 games is really good for a guy North Greenville. Is that even like JUCO, D2, D3? Sorry, Jaylen, I don't even know off the top of my head. Like, that's impressive for a guy like that, a small school guy, 20th round draft pick, to hold his own in Delmarva. So he's an athletic, left-handed hitting shortstop who showed a lot of good things in low A, and hopefully he gets up to high this year, and let's see what he's really got at that level.
I had a chance to see Vasquez in person in Delmarva last summer, and what I'll say is that defensively he passes the eye test. And I didn't come away thinking this guy's definitely a big league shortstop, but I think he can at least move around the infield and be comfortable on both sides of the second base bag. And just to dive in a little bit more to his background, he actually started his college career at South Carolina, spent two seasons there, primarily in a backup role, and then transferred to North Greenville for the 2023 season, had a good showing there, and then performed pretty well in the Coastal Plain League after that. So he fits the bill of an Orioles draft pick who had an upward arrow next to his name heading into the draft, even if it was at a D2 school. Good power there, good walks to strikeout numbers, OPS of over 1,000 across 217 plate appearances. So he performed well there, and I think that there is some real athleticism to Vasquez, and he's definitely a guy that fans should not be sleeping on going into this year. I'm going to go now to the guy who was 49th on Bob's list and 50th on Nick's list. And Bob, I'll go back to you here since you had him a little bit higher on your list. Young right-handed pitcher.
Yeah, Edgar Portes, just another in a long line of really talented pitchers that came through Delmarva and have been there for a couple seasons now to go along with Davey Cruz, Moises Chace, Juan de los Santos, et cetera, et cetera. But Portes, he's like, I think he signed, was it 2019? He was one of the earlier signees, I feel like, to come into the Orioles organization. And you can see why Elias or Kobe Perez, this organization liked him. 6'2", so a big, tall, right-handed pitcher as he adds weight. He's already, I want to say, it's so hard to tell with these younger guys. I feel like he's low to mid-90s with the fastball already. You can see that tick up. Just really pitched way better than the numbers would indicate, in my opinion, last year. Got 80 innings in low A Delmarva. Pitched to a 4.24 ERA, but that was also with a 3.34 and 3.35 FIP and XFIP respectively. Struck out 106 batters over 80 innings, which is good for 31% strikeout rate and just a tick over 10% walk rate. I just, you know, he's still only 21 years old. So I just think there's a lot of upside here. And I think he, even if the numbers weren't lighting the world on fire, just watching him pitch, he seemed much more composed than he did in 2022 and just like a much better pitcher. So just want to continue to see that development and think he could be a guy that, you know, this is the year of the pitcher, could be one of the guys that just glows up a little bit this year and breaks into our top 50 firmly in 2024.
Yeah, I was trying to find it real quick, but he actually had his fastball had one of the biggest velo gains in all of minor league baseball, I think, or at least for his age level. I can't remember which one exactly, but it was like a significant boost in fastball velo last year. Repeated Delmarva last year. That's okay, because he was just 20 years old. And like you mentioned some of the numbers there, that the improvements of the strikeout rate, 31%, but that was an improvement from 18% the year before. The walk rate went down from 14% to 10%. Like that's awesome to see from a guy repeating that level. And still he's turns what, 21? Is he 21 already? I don't know. Either way, he's 21 years old still, and will be in high A, end of the year in high A. So this is a guy who I like to put guys like this on the back end of my top 50 list. Like you could put a more high floor reliever type prospect, which I did have two, and Teddy Sharkey and another guy who we'll talk about in a second. But they're just, these two guys are just so good, I had to put them on. But I like guys like Portes who, you know, they're young, they're still very raw, they're wild cards, but they've got like one or two things they do so well. And he's a bigger guy who has worked as a starter up to this point, that if things start clicking for him, which they started to do last year in Delmarva, like he could become a legitimate pitching prospect in this organization if he takes off in Aberdeen next year. So I'm excited to watch him pitch. He was a guy who, like, we were tracking the numbers. We saw the numbers were good last year, and they were better and better as the season progressed. But he was still a guy who, when he pitched, I was just like, do I want to watch Edgar Portes tonight? I don't know. I never really sat down and watched one of his outings in depth. And I feel like I missed the boat on Portes on doing that last year with him, unfortunately. But I'm excited to see what he can do in Aberdeen, which it sucks that he's in Aberdeen now, because we're not going to be able to really sit down and watch his outings in depth. We'll have to watch it from the bird's eye view, but take what we can get, I guess.
I was really, really close to having Portes on my list. Portes and another guy who I'm going to talk about towards the end of the episode fell just outside. We're really 51 and 52 for me. love his fastball. I think his fastball is a legitimate pitch. It's getting better. It's got some nice movement to it. I think for me, I want to see how the rest of that repertoire develops and how he's able to maintain his command, which got a lot better at Delmarva down the stretch. I want to see how that carries over to Aberdeen a little bit, but I get the feeling that on my own list, the first graduation we have during the season, Portes will probably slide into my top 50. And at that point, should be, you know, provide everything's going well for him, should be in our top 50 firmly at that point. So I'm really excited to see what he does. And Nick, we'll go back to you here because you just touched on the fact you had a reliever towards the back end of your list that you really liked.
Do I really like this kid? Well, he's not a kid. He's like 26 years old now, but Keegan Gillies. He's going to be in the major leagues this year. I'll just say it now. Yes, he's 26, but I don't care about the age. 5 years at Tulane, missed almost all of 2022. I think he had like two or three outings and then came back at the very end of the year. So missed pretty much all of 2022 with an injury. So last year was really his first full year of pro ball, and he was immaculate. The 0.54 ERA in high A, 27 strikeouts to four walks, gets 18 games in Bowie, and the numbers, not as good, 3.75 ERA, which for a reliever, like, that's good, 34 strikeouts to 10 walks, but six of the 10 runs he gave up in Bowie came in two outings. So 13 of his 18 outings in Bowie went 1 to 2 innings with no earned runs allowed. Like, that's dominant. I will take that. He's listed at 6'8", runs it up into the upper 90s. The splitter's a big league pitch. He might start back in Bowie, but I don't know. Depending on how Norfolk's staff shakes out and depending on how, you know, he looks on the backfields this spring, I could potentially see him starting in Norfolk's bullpen. We'll see, TBD in a couple weeks here. But I just think between like Chase McDermott, Wandison Charles who can throw more strikes, Chase McDermott with that fastball and his repertoire he's got, and a more developed Keegan Gillies, that's three good examples right there of some like high octane late season bullpen additions that the Orioles could have at their disposal come, you know, post trade deadline, that could just add this whole new dynamic to the back end of games late in the year.
Yeah, love Keegan Gillies, and shout out to Locked On Orioles. Connor Newcomb had a great interview with Gillies last week. I think it was towards the end of last week. Really good insight there. Smart kid. He's a big fan of Wandison Charles as well, just like we all are. And he's 6'8", big upper 90s fastball with the splitter. Add him to the mountain range and let's go. I think he's definitely going to make his major league debut this year. And yeah, I'm excited to see it. I think him and Wandison Charles are not that much different, honestly, other than I think Gillies is his bigger guy. But yeah, high octane stuff, and I can't wait to see how it plays in AAA and then in Baltimore.
Yeah, I think the thing for Gillies is, if he goes back to Bowie, is just finding the consistency that we saw towards the end of the year and being able to keep the walks down as he did at Aberdeen. You look at his strikeout-to-walk numbers when he was with the Ironbirds, 27 batters against 27 strikeouts against just four walks in 16 2/3 innings. The walks crept up a little bit at Bowie, but I think when you're overpowering hitters the way that Gillies does, you can live with the walks a little bit. He certainly exceeded expectations for me last year, and I'm really excited to see what he does. And I agree with both of you. If he's able to improve on what he did last year and carry that over to AAA, because we know that bump to AAA is going to happen quickly, if he starts off strong at Bowie, he's going to be in the conversation for a bullpen job.
I also like the answer he gave at the end of Connor's interview. The guy does not give the politically correct answers. When Connor asked him, you know, you're a 10-year veteran in Major League Baseball, because he's from New Orleans, would you ever consider, like, you know, say, like, Baltimore seafood is better than New Orleans? And he was like, no, never. The crab cakes are good, but the seafood doesn't match up. I'm like, the man's given rightful, truthful answers, in his heart, truthful answers. I respect it. I respect the guy even more after that interview. Just had to throw that shot in there for as a non-Mailander here.
I'll go now to the two players that were on my personal top 50 that missed our overall top 50. And I'll start with the guy who came in 47th on my list, and that is Ryan Long. And Long, to me, is just one of those really kind of fascinating prospects that the Orioles have. a right-hander who's generally successful despite the lack of high upside velocity. What he does really well is that he's got such a broad repertoire of pitches. The fastball and the changeup are what you will probably see outing to outing be the most consistent for him, but he can also mix in a curveball, a cutter, a slider. And for a lot of people, Long came onto the scene last year when he struck out Mike Trout during the World Baseball Classic, but he managed to carry that over into a pretty solid regular season, pitched really well at Aberdeen, and took a step back at Bowie. There's no question about that. The walk numbers went in the wrong direction, had more trouble keeping the ball in the ballpark, but I think that the formula is there for him to be successful at the AA level with adjustments. And if we're going to look towards the back of our list and a guy like Cameron Weston, I think Weston's secondaries are better than Long's, but there's not that much of a gap between those two guys. And Long, you know, much like Weston, to me, represents that kind of wild card where right now it looks like a reliever. He looks like a reliever, but there's a possibility if a couple of things go right for him and he really makes strides in his development, maybe he's a starter.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. If he's going to sit 95 to 97 this year, that could be the thing, because in that one spring training outing, I don't remember exactly what he touched, but I was like, whoa, didn't know he had that in him. So, yeah, if he went to tread or something and got that velocity up a tick or two combined with the rest of the repertoire, then, yeah, I'm going to buy in big time on Ryan Long this year. But we'll see. Even if it comes back down to like 93 to 95, that's still better than I think it was last year and intriguing to say the least.
I think it was 97 that he touched in that game, which was impressive because I think 96 was as high going into last season. So velo continuing to tick up. Yeah, like Zach mentioned, the deep repertoire there. I know there's a lot of impressive data on a lot of those pitches. It's a matter of just him putting it all together. I almost wonder if he's a good candidate to, you know, put him in a shorter relief role. And I wonder if that stuff will bump up even more. Could he throw 97, 98? He sit another tick higher if he's throwing just one inning gas. I don't know. He's already a pretty like developed guy, so I don't know how much projection is there with him, but yeah, nice under the radar name. So he does in Bowie this year. And I think he's also like he also went to law school. I want to say there was a really cool story about him like a couple years ago. Like, I think he's going to law school on the side as he's also pitching professionally. So yeah, just another smart guy, deep repertoire, fun arm to watch in Bowie this year. We'll see what kind of role they put him in.
He's really setting the bar high.
Good one
for himself.
The other guy on my list that I think fits into a similar mold in some ways and who plays 50th, so the very last spot on my list, Daniel Lloyd. Lloyd kind of came onto my radar. Matt Blood was doing an interview with, I believe it was Jake Rill over at Orioles.com for his newsletter before last season, and seemingly went out of his way to shout out Daniel Lloyd. And I remember texting the two of you saying, Matt Blood, you know, just plug Daniel Lloyd here. What's going on? Because you look at Lloyd's numbers in Delmarva the year before, between Delmarva and Aberdeen, and they were solid, but nothing there really jumped out. And he pitched primarily out of the bullpen. Last year, he goes to Aberdeen, and while he was there the full season, he's another example of where the Orioles took a guy that had been mostly reliever and managed to make him a pretty successful starter. 3.24 ERA, 102 and two-thirds innings, struck out 108 batters in that span. And what impresses me about Lloyd is the fastball. And again, it's not so much about the velocity, but it's a really high spin, really effective pitch that has been able to keep hitters off balance to this point. We saw a broader repertoire come in as he worked in the starting rotation role. He doesn't have that sort of Alex Pham thing where he can put the fastball just about anywhere and then get hitters out with that curveball. But he can still work through a lineup efficiently, miss bats. And I think that there is some room for development here where if you could get the fastball velocity up a little bit, now you're looking at someone who could be effective in short outings, or you could try to stretch into a long relief role or possibly even a starter. But take a guy that was a reliever at South Carolina, reliever in his first full year of pro ball, and get the results that the Orioles did from him last year was really encouraging to me.
Yeah, I'm a fan of Lloyd as well. And the Matt Blood shout out goes a long way to back up his performance following that. Just says a lot that he's continuing to develop and get better, just like all these guys are. This is why this is the year of the pitcher, in my slash our opinion, is just look at this long list of names that are so intriguing and with one or two steps in the right direction could become that much better as prospects onto our top 50 list, up our top 50 list and beyond. So yeah, can't wait to see what he does to follow up last year.
And this doesn't even include a lot of like high upside, I think, international arms and bats that, again, we just don't have a lot of information on. So that's, yep, that's going to be a lot of fun as well. But yeah, with Lloyd, I feel like I said this last year when we talk about it, but I feel like he should be 30. He's only 23, but I just feel like he's so much older than he is. But I also think he probably spent all of last year in high A because innings, like they want to get him a high volume of innings, and I don't know if they were going to be there for him in double A. Keep him in high Aberdeen's rotation, and he can continue on that path. So I'm curious to see, because Bowie's going to be crowded again this year, but I'm curious to see how they use him. Fastball's good, slider's good, probably a relief prospect long term, but a guy who can give you length down the road. I think I agree with Zach there that I don't think anything really pops with him, but he strikes out a ton of guys and he's been effective for two straight years now. So I'm put him in Bowie, whatever role you want to, and let's see how the stuff plays with double A this year.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And we have more guys we're going to shout out in this episode because all three of us struggle with how to put this list together. It's really challenging, and there are players that we probably deep down really wanted to include in the top 50, but at the end of the day just couldn't find room for. And we're going to highlight those guys in the second half of this episode. But first, we want to have a shout-out here from our sponsor.
Hey, Orioles fans. Are you ready to show your true colors? Look no further than Birdland Sports, the ultimate fan-made T-shirt shop that's all about the birds. At Birdland Sports, we're not just fans. We're part of the flock. Our collection of features unique designs inspired by the Baltimore Orioles and their star players. From classic logos to modern twists, each piece tells a story of passion and pride. Whether you're at Camden Yards or cheering from home, our tees are the perfect way to celebrate every home run and strikeout. Made by fans for fans, our gear is a home run for quality and style. Let's go, O's. Let's go, O's. So fly over to birdlandsports.com today and get your hands on the freshest Orioles apparel out there. And for our podcast listeners, use the code OrioleSCast at checkout for an exclusive discount. That's not real. Chirp, chirp, chirp. Birdland Sports, where the love of the game and fashion hits a grand slam.
Was that noise earlier in the ad read supposed to be a crowd cheering?
Yes.
I thought you were having your teeth cleaned at the dentist. I couldn't tell what that was.
You know, it must have been at Tampa Bay Stadium.
Yeah. A little magic mind there.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we'll go now to the rest of the players that we consider for our top 50, but ultimately fell just short of our individual list. And Bob has a pretty interesting mix here because we talked about not knowing a lot about some of the international guys and as well as maybe having some question marks about players that have shown flashes of success at the lower levels, even if they haven't been able to put it together just yet. And Bob kind of covers that here with his three guys that he wants to shout out tonight.
Yeah, first off is a guy who's popping up in top 30 lists, which I wish we could be part of that, but we just don't have enough because he's only played in the DSL so far, and that's third baseman Joshua Lorenzo, who I have just hanging out just outside my top 50, waiting for the chance to put him in there, but I just can't justify it yet at this point. We'll see. Maybe I'll change my mind by the time our May update rolls around. We'll see, but want to see him at least get to the FCL, see what his walk strikeout numbers, if he's able to build upon the strong end that he had in the DSL. He got better as the year went on. And yeah, especially if he can make it to Delmarva and we can get eyes on him and some more information. That's one of my guys. I don't know if you guys want to chime in.
Power. The kid was, 16 years old. He was one of the youngest international signings in all of baseball last year and has already shown the power in the DSL, like a place where you don't really see a lot of over-the-fence power. I like it. I think it is cool. I joke a lot that, you know, I don't really read MLB pipeline stuff. I don't really care for their top 30 lists because, like, Joe Trezza makes the list. I'm not that interested. But, like, he gets input from the Orioles front office, like from Orioles sources as well. And like, it does get some input as well from guys like Jonathan. I think Jonathan Mayo who gets the Orioles list over there as well, kind of oversees it. But like to have somebody telling him like this is a top 30 kid, I think that's pretty awesome. I think hopefully he makes a lot of noise in the FCL this year.
Yeah, I agree. Lorenzo was one of those guys that we had our eye on coming out of last year's international class because he was not the top bonus guy. That was the Luis Almeida, but he was in that next tier where it seemed like he could be someone that broke out in some way over the next couple of years. The power was there, the walk to strikeout numbers, which we look at a lot. You know, struck out, I think, a little bit more than you would like, but the walk numbers were solid. So a good base to build from for him. And I agree, I could see him really breaking out in the FCL.
And another guy who has been stuck in, I don't want to say stuck, but in Delmarva the past two seasons, and is just like Edgar Portis, another one of these guys that has already made improvements, and you can just see the breakout happening at some point. It's Moises Chace, great stuff, electric arm, but you got to be able to throw more strikes than balls, and I think that's what his biggest struggle has been to this point. But it did seem like it was getting better, and then I think he must have been dealing with a minor injury later in the season. I don't think he really ended as strong as the middle of the year went for him, but I like him as a strong upside arm, and I'll just go right to Trendon Craig, my other guy, another 20th round pick for the Orioles. He's struggled between injuries and an inconsistency, but I think this is a make or break year for him. And I think he still has the tools to be a guy that can make our top 50 list at some point this year, if everything breaks right.
Yeah. I like Craig, like I referenced earlier, just injuries. He always seems to get hurt and miss a big chunk of time, and it like lingers, but he flashes some like real power in some of the games that when you watch him play. So I just want to see him stay healthy. I actually had Chase as well, that some notes on him that because I wanted to shout him out. I wanted him on my top 50. He's still just 20 years old. He doesn't turn 21 until June, but he's already got over 120 innings in Delmarva over the last 2 years. 2022 was okay. I think he had a couple freak injuries in there. I think one, like he slipped on the mound and missed a couple starts or whatever after that. But there was another injury, I think, as well. But repeated Delmarva as a 19-20-year-old, lowered his ERA by half a run, like 4.5. But the strikeout rate went from 23% to 33%. The walk rate did creep up even more, though. That was like 15, 16, 17%. That's not good at all. But hitters only hit 193 against him. He's 6'1". He's getting bigger. The velo's up to like 95, 96. I think there's more in the tank. He had a really good April last year. May and June were awful. Combined ERA of like 8 in those 2 months, and he had 34 walks in those 2 months alone. But then in July, Chase pitched a season-high 17 innings in the month of July last year, and he allowed 0 runs in 17 innings, 7 walks to 27 strikeouts. I don't know if it finally clicked, because like Bob said, the season ended. He had, I think, I don't know what exact injury it was, but he didn't pitch pretty much at all the final 2 months of the year, a start or two here. But he's a 20-year-old kid still who could probably be in Aberdeen's. He's going to be in Aberdeen's rotation at some point this year. And if that month of July last year was more of the real Moises Chace, then I think he's going to make a lot of noise this year. But you still got to prove that that just wasn't like a 1 month fluke. But
yeah, I just wonder if he could be like a Edward Cabrera type You know, he's always going to walk batters, but electric arm, get the strikeouts, probably more reliever risk than you'd want. But yeah, like him.
Yeah, I think that seems like a reasonable comp. The big thing with Tase is the walks. You don't want to see him walking batters to the rate that he has at Delmarva, but at the same time, he's only 20. He doesn't turn 21 until June. He could start next year at this coming year at Delmarva and pitch there for a month or two and go to Aberdeen and still only be a 21-year-old in high A. And the strikeout numbers were excellent last year. And as Nick said, he was really good over the month of July. So if you want to look for something as a possible springboard to him being more successful last year, it's going to be the way he pitched before the injury he had that took him out of action for a little while last summer. And then as for Craig, it's really just a matter of whether or not he can stay healthy, because you can tell that the raw tools are there with him. And there is a lot more left in the tank, especially with his power. It's just that he has not had a really healthy extended run yet in two full seasons in pro ball. And it's tough for him because the Orioles are so deep in outfielders, and that's not going to change anytime soon. But even if he, you know, has to DH a little bit more next year, the key is just going to be getting at bats and showing what he can do when he's in the box, because you see flashes of him being a really solid player.
I can go one more name that I had as well, and it's another pitcher. Well, Silas Ardoin, TBD on how exactly you pronounce his last name, but Silas Ardoin was a guy who I also considered as well, but like defensive catcher, his walk numbers, again, didn't he have that outrageous walk start to his career, his pro career, and he's doing it again in spring training at the major league level this year so far. But defensive catcher, I could see him having a major league career. I think he definitely will. Questions about how much of the bat we're going to see, but I considered him as well. But another guy is another pitcher, Kyle Verbitsky. I really wanted him in my top 50. Comes over in the Cole Irvin trade, gets assigned to high A, where we thought, all right, maybe he's just going to go there for a couple of weeks and acclimate to the new organization. But his experience in high A already over in Oakland and his age, he needs to be in double A. And then he got shelled when he was in Aberdeen. His first four outings, he had a 12.66 ERA, a whip over two. May got better, but then in June, he had his real breakout, a 0.92 ERA, an 0.81 average against, and a 0.56 whip in the month of June. Kind of put it in cruise control for the rest of the year. Great season for Verbitsky. He's 6'7", can run up into the mid-90s. I think he's a guy who the Orioles were just kind of fine with leaving in high A as they kind of make their tweaks to his game. Clearly, they worked at the high A level, and I'm excited to see what he can do in double A now. But
yeah, Ardoin or Ardoin, however it's pronounced. It was interesting to see him last year because he got off to a really bad start at Aberdeen, never got comfortable at the plate, but then he had that little bit of a bump we've seen some players have at Bowie where good power numbers, the walk numbers went way up. He was getting on base more, and that was a good thing for him. So going into this year, especially since he's probably going to have a lot of opportunities to catch early on with Samuel Basayo dealing with the elbow issue, just see the good defense behind the plate, see how he works the pitching staff, and as long as he's a guy that can get on base with some level of consistency and isn't overmatched at the plate, I think he's going to be a big leaguer. It's just a question of, can he separate himself enough to be, you know, a glove first backup or a catcher who kind of bounces back and forth between a starting role and a reserve role versus an Austin Wins, where you always have a job because of the glove, but the bat more often than not is going to keep you down in AAA. That's going to be the real question mark with Ardoin, but he showed some signs at Bowie last year of being able to address that issue. And then for Verbitsky, I just love the trajectory that he had last year, being able to overcome that slow start. Because honestly, when Verbitsky came in, my impression of him, and granted, there's a little bit of scouting the stat line, which I shouldn't have done, was he'll pitch really well at Aberdeen. And then he'll go to Bowie and he'll struggle a little bit, but he'll at least pitch well enough you pencil him in for a roster spot towards the end of the year. He came a long way over the course of the season, and you could tell early in the you know, go back to April or May of last year, hitters were just sitting on his fastball. And that was forcing him to make a lot of mistakes. I think he was able to locate the fastball. I think the pitch overall got better as the season went on, and that allowed him to make better use of the rest of his repertoire. So some real adjustments along the way from him. And I feel like, you know, with an extended run at Bowie this year, he could find some success.
Yeah, I'm trying to look because I saw him pitch twice early on. Well, early on and then again in Aberdeen when he had like one of his first breakout games. I think I saw him June 25th when he went 6 shutout innings with 8 strikeouts. And I want to say no walks. Yeah, no walks. Early on in the season, you could tell he was working on something because the walks were up. He had 3 walks, 2 walks, 3 walks. Like he was walking a lot of batters over the first month of the season and getting hit around a lot. So clearly the Orioles were working on him with something and it must have clicked because he just got better and better as the season went on. So yeah, I'm also a big fan of Verbitsky and Silas. Are you doing is I don't know, maybe the future backup to Adley Rutschman with Basayo, like third catcher, masher, first base, DH type. I don't know. I think he's got the glove. He's got the patience at the plate, swing decisions, and we'll see if the bat can eventually get there enough to be much more than the next Maverick Hanley. But yeah, I think there's certainly something there.
So just to address the pronunciation question real quick, Silas's dad, Danny, did play in the major leagues. A couple of stints in the majors between 2000 and 2008. Actually was an Oriole briefly in 2006. According to Baseball Reference, the pronunciation is Ardois. A-R, lowercase, and then the dash, and then D-W-A-H, uppercase. Now, several spring training broadcasts have pronounced it different ways this year, but hopefully Baseball Reference is right, and we can use that as our guide going forward. I'll go with a pitcher who I actually had on a Patreon list last summer. And I came very close to putting on my top 50, and that is Zach Fruit, a 2023 draftee who had kind of a, as we talk about, a little bit of an upward arrow going into the draft. And that's something you like to see for guys the Orioles select. Just give a little background on Fruit, chosen out of Troy University, Alabama, in the 9th round of last year's draft. He had pitched really well in the MLB draft league with Frederick the year before. The ERA was not great, but really good strikeout to walk numbers and reports of a velo spike that carried over into last season at Troy. And in fact, Joe Doyle over at Future Star Series, who's been a guest on this show before, wrote a very positive write-up on Fruit going into last year's draft, noting the stuff jump that he had and praised Fruit when he came on our show last summer. We did not get a chance to see Fruit pitch after the draft last year, so there's still a little bit of a mystery there, at least as far as we're concerned. But when you look at the data, this is the kind of guy that you like to see the Orioles take a chance on. Definite reliever stuff with a possible starter's mix if he's able to round out the rest of the repertoire to go with the fastball, and a velo spike over the last couple of years that now has him throwing in the mid to upper 90s. I'm really excited to see what he can do.
Yeah, Fruit is a guy who, you watch some of his college video, you see exactly why the Orioles drafted him. He's got that overhand arm slot. So he's got the high arm slot that the Orioles always covet. I think he touched like 99 in college at one point. That's impressive as well. I don't care about the college numbers. He's another guy who was in college for 5 years. I think he was two at Eastern Michigan, one of the directional schools in Michigan, 1 year at Troy, and I think he did 2 years in a JUCO, but he was a five-year college guy. The walk rate, not good in college. ERA is not good in college, but the Orioles drafted a guy like Zach Fruit. They drafted Nestor Herman from Seattle University, who there's like no information on out there in the universe. They drafted a lot of these guys last year, these pitchers, who the college numbers are awful, but the data and their profiles fit the Orioles mold to a T, and Fruit is one of those. High octane fastball from his vertical arm slot, slider as well. He's got that to fall back on to be some powerful, like late inning arm. I'm excited to watch him pitch this year for the first time.
Yeah, it's just these guys that didn't get to pitch following the draft are always like, ooh, what are they holding back? What are we going to see when we finally see them? And especially the reports of the high velocity arm. I'm curious to see if he's going to be like put on the Keegan Gillis, Teddy Sharkey train, like just put you in a bullpen and let you throw gas and move up the ranks relatively quickly, or if they're going to try to, you know, work with some things to potentially at least try him as a starter in the beginning of the year. But I'm super curious to see how he does, and he might end up on my top 50 list if we see him and he's starting and throwing in the upper 90s. Yeah, he could make a case very easily.
I'm going back over Joe Doyle's report here, and he notes that early in his college career, Fruit was mainly 90 to 93 with an average slider and a changeup. Then he has a fastball spike, and on top of that, the changeup seemed to make some strides, but then he added a curveball to that mix as well. So you add a fourth pitch, and kind of remains to be seen what the Orioles do, but I almost get the sense, like, is this a guy where after the first season, or maybe even over the course of this offseason, they work on a sweeper or a cutter? Because that would fit the bill of the kind of, you know, how they would work with a pitcher like this.
I like, there's a lot of guys. Michael Ferret, we didn't see at all. Jackson Baumeister, obviously the top pitcher, but Nestor Hermann, like I mentioned, Levi Wells. There's a lot of pitchers that some we touched on in the top 50, some who are not on the top 50, some we didn't even mention tonight that we didn't get to see at all last year, but we will in Delmarva this year. So I'm pumped, and that's only like we're only like 3 weeks away from minor league season starting, so we'll get to see him soon enough.
We are certainly looking forward to that, and we're also only about 2 weeks away from Orioles opening day. We'll have plenty of coverage for you here leading up to the start of the major league season and the start of the minor league season. We will be back next week. In the meantime, you can check us out on our many social media channels, including over at Facebook, X, Threads, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. And while you're browsing on the internet, check us out over at Substack, OrielsOnTheBirds.substack.com, and become a member of our Patreon community. You can sign up for a paid membership for as little as $3 a month, have access to our Substack newsletter, as well as the patron-exclusive channels in our Discord group, and at the $5 and $10 levels, have access to our bonus daily coverage, which we will be delivering all throughout the regular season. For Bob Phelan and Nick Stevens, this is Zach Spedden. You've been listening to Orioles on the Verge, part of the Believe Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.